This is North Shore Today for Thursday, January 28th. Hi, everyone. I'm Bill Newell.
I'm Rick Moore.
And in today's North Shore Today, we'll look at a variety of different stories, including the congested traffic on Route 107 in Salem and Lynn.
Yeah, it looks like the Magnolia Fire Station will be open until June at least.
And that's in the city of Gloucester? Yeah.
It is.
All right. A couple of other notes here just to share with you. As part of our program today, we're going to run a feature interview with Julie Shimana. She is the gymnastics coach at Beverly High School. They have a long winning streak dating back 5 years or so. And we'll talk with her. We're also going to be putting a post up on Beverly Gymnastics a little bit later on today. But we'll hear from Beverly Shimana. And we also have a couple of videos we're putting up. One, Rick, you had mentioned the anniversary of the Challenger accident. Well, I think NASA might have put up a little tribute video yesterday. And we've got that up there. We're going to put that up on the post as well today. And also in the news, of course, tonight is the another Republican debate. This one on Fox, and this one without Donald Trump. And so we do have a video, a CNN video, of some of the Trump-Megyn Kelly exchanges. So in case you've missed it or want to go to it, I can't imagine that, but it's going to be there for you, just in case you have absolutely nothing better to do during the day today.
Okay. I can't wait for that one. Bill, up in Gloucester, the Magnolia Fire Station has been closed quite a bit of the time. It's an outlying fire station due to budget constraints, and the fire chief, Eric Smith, was given the green light to shift some funds from one part of the city budget over to another so that overtime will allow the Magnolia Fire Station to be open 75% of the time between now and June, and that's when the current fire contract expires. Previous contract negotiated by the previous mayor opened up some of the fire station, or actually all of the fire stations for the last couple of years for the most part, but that money is now running out. New contract is looming, as they say, and so we'll have to keep our eye on that. I noticed the other thing I want to mention is the several people have talked to me off the record about the former Essex Tech superintendent of schools, and now I see a headline by Paul Layton, excuse me, in the Gloucester Times and the Salem News about the school committee is alleging misconduct by Dan O'Connell, and among the allegations by the school committee, the Essex Tech School Committee, is that O'Connell ordered the school business manager to pay him a $20,000 stipend that was not authorized. He directed the business manager to pay him a $4,500 car allowance, not authorized, used a school gas card for personal business, ordered an administrative assistant to mark his vacation days as work days, and there are several other financial allegations as well. And the bottom line, it comes out to $88,902 that they want him to repay.
Just some nitpicking there, yeah. Well, and this guy's not there anymore, too. The
right, I guess he was only there for a short time.
Yeah, the new superintendent is Bill Lupini, who comes from Brookline, but via Beverly. He was Bill Lupini was in Beverly for a number of years. So the North Shore folks are familiar with Bill, and I'm hoping that I think he's going to be a lot different. That's Lupini has a great
with,
track record, yeah.
Yeah, talking with both the PBD and the Salem mayors, they were saying that, Superintendent Lupini has been tremendous in working with the cities and towns. And so looks like this thing is beginning to boil over, as they say, and we'll see what happens there. But that's not chump change, almost $90,000.
No, not at all. Well, let's hope they get to the bottom of that, and that kind of behavior is definitely not acceptable. And that's Essex Tech. Now, there's another story, Rick, in the news today about a hearing that was held in Salem at the high school regarding the traffic on Route 107. This is the route Highland Avenue and Western Avenue, that corridor, which is kind of tied in as well to the debate on the Union Hospital piece, which is owned by North Shore Medical Center, based out of Salem, also owns the Lynn Hospital on Linfield Street, because any ambulances have to go up and down 107. Highland Avenue, Western Avenue, to get to Salem Hospital if there's no longer a hospital in Lynn for them to go to. So anyways, they have a hearing, and it sounds like there's the state's is projecting in some increased traffic, which includes some new movie theaters. But who knows what happens with that. But anyways, that hearing has taken place. So the state is gathering information on that and the impact of some of these developments and the impact, I guess, of what would need to be done to keep 107 workable. It's one of those roads, Rick, that certain times of the day it's pretty clogged up. A couple of different bottlenecks up by the Tri-City Sales area, and also down by the Walmart down there, going north and south on that at different times of the day. But on the other hand, I used to do that route quite a bit, and it just seems like one of those things. One of those things that's just there, just like other people have other bottlenecks and so on every day. So that's what it is. So that hearing did take place, so we'll see what happens with that. And I don't know if I did mention, but they are planning some new movie theaters up there on Highland Avenue as well in Salem at some point. But, you know, I'm thinking a lot of the movie theater traffic is going to be at night, and that's not necessarily an issue. And then, of course, on weekends it could be problematic, but it is a weekend.
Well, I was I had to go to Leahy and Danvers yesterday, and what's the street? Conan Street. I had to go on Conan Street, and to get there, I come off 128 onto 1A in Beverly. I was astounded at the volume of traffic on 1A at about, 8 o'clock yesterday morning. It was, or just before 8 o'clock, about 7:45. It was incredible, and we've talked about the traffic south of 128, 2 o'clock in the afternoon, 3 o'clock in the afternoon every day, and I'm just wondering, boy, if we're reaching critical mass on these roadways all over the North Shore. It's really amazing.
Well, you know, you and I have talked about the 128 South traffic up in that Beverly area, Beverly, Danvers, Peabody area, in the afternoon. And that to me baffles me a little bit, but it really must speak to the kind of development or whatever. I don't know what it speaks to. I don't know where those cars are coming from. You wouldn't think it would just be school traffic. It's got to be work, some kind of work-related traffic. But there's always a lot more school traffic during the. But this goes on. I think it's when there's not school too. You can tell certain things are school-related, and because schools, kind of drive, if you'll pardon the pun, so much of the traffic during the week in some of the neighborhoods. But I'm just wondering where that comes from. Clearly, there's a lot more office development up on the North Shore, Danvers, Peabody, and on up into Gloucester and into the industrial park there. So people have to go, a guy that might have had a job in Peabody or into Boston before now may very well, instead of going south, travels north to work every day. So that kind of traffic picks up. But it's just staggering, that amount of traffic in the afternoon, almost the middle of the afternoon on 128 South. It's crazy. And it's not just construction, although sometimes it is, but it's just amazing.
Yeah. I want to mention too, Bill, once again, the Challenger accident that happened 30 years ago was the first launch of a manned mission, a live mission, first live launch that I didn't watch in the history of the space program. I used to watch them all live on television, and I didn't watch that one live purposely because I had applied for the Teacher in Space program. And it was a grueling process. It was a 20-page application booklet. And by the time you're finishing filling it out, you got about 60 pages worth of stuff there. And one of the things they did, they picked two teachers from each state as semi-finalists. And I know that one of the teachers from Massachusetts, and I don't mean this disrespectfully, but he was a huge, huge man. And he was very, very large. And the thing is, you don't send up people over 165 pounds into space because of the weight limit and how expensive. Back in 1986, it was $10,000 a pound to get into space, and there was a weight limit, I think, of 165 pounds. So when I saw that they had selected this gentleman as a semi-finalist, he was a science teacher from out in the middle of the state, I just said, no, this thing is rigged. And then they went and picked Krista McAuliffe, who I think was an elementary school teacher, and I was baffled by that. How the bozo could they do that? And, of course, as it turned out, she was just a wonderful candidate for the job. And I guess they've released a new video about showing her rehearsing her lesson that she was going to give from space. But I do remember when there was a retired Air Force, he wasn't retired, but a former Air Force pilot was a math teacher, and he came into the room and told me he had seen the accident on television and interrupted my class. And from that moment on, it was just such a horrible, horrible feeling. Because up to that point, we were getting into space fairly routinely, and it reminded everybody how difficult it is to get just a couple hundred miles up, above the Earth. It's very, very difficult. And, Krista McAuliffe, tragically, I guess the good that's come from it is all of the McAuliffe Foundation science and scholarships that have been awarded to kids in the 30 years since then. But, Bill, a quick story, if I may. Her backup was an elementary school teacher named Barbara Morgan. And Barbara Morgan stayed with the program after the accident. And a few years ago, I want to say maybe 5 years ago, Barbara Morgan, I think she was age 52 at that point, had actually qualified as a full-fledged astronaut, not as a mission specialist, but not as a tourist in space and not as a guest. She actually went through all the astronaut training, learned how to fly jets, became a jet pilot herself. Now, this is a second grade teacher, Bill. Stayed with the program, got her wings, went into space, and actually performed as a mission specialist on the robotic arm. So I just think that's one of the most amazing stories of all time, that this tiny woman who had no training in terms of flying or in terms of space travel and science and all that stuff, the backup to Krista McAuliffe actually flew in space as a full-fledged astronaut, not as a guest.
Wow, that's amazing, yeah. It's one of those things, Ricky, you remind me, as kids growing up, that you would watch the launches and the landings. It was a television event. The networks carried it. You'd have Walter Cronkite and Wally Schirra, you know, the former astronaut, doing the play-by-play for you. You'd have this live event coverage, you're right. At that point, there was always that. You know, by the time the Challenger accident, we were pretty confident in putting rockets up into space and launching them. But prior to that, I think there was always this tense. There was a lot of tenseness, I think, at NASA, and I think portrayed by Walter Cronkite and Wally Schirra or whatever, that it was an event, and you never knew what was really going to happen, I guess. But we don't do that anymore, obviously, and times have certainly changed, and that's okay. We get that. We're moving forward and so on. But that was a big part of our lives, I think, growing up, the space program and watching these launches and landings.
Yeah, and that was, I think, to that point, the darkest moment of the space program. Prior to that, there was, the Apollo 1 tragedy, which was just horrible. And that actually, as it turned out, was caused by trying to save dollars. Instead of having a mixed atmosphere in the space capsule, they had 100% oxygen in there, and it was a slight spark, a tiny little spark of something that misfired, you know, with a switch. Somebody flipped a switch, and it caused that fire in which three astronauts were killed. But since then, you know, excuse me, people do understand the risk, and, you know, private enterprise, look at what Elon Musk is doing at SpaceX, and, scale composites. They've got Spaceship Two in the works, and things are moving upward, as they say.
I was at the I'm not sure if it was the Smithsonian or one of the museums a number of years ago, and you go into these original old capsules, whether it be the Mercury capsule or Gemini or whatever, and you look at them, you look at the dials, you look at the gauges, the seats. It's like being in a Jeep from World War II. I mean, that, you know, it's not like what, I mean, you can walk into a Honda Accord and see so much more technology today than you did in these space capsules. And it's amazing that these things, that what they were able to do with that. I mean, around that, behind the panels, I'm sure there's more technology, but it was a different era. It's almost like, you know, looking at today's jets and then going back and looking in the museums to the planes that the military flew in World War II, you know, without the radar, without all kinds of different things, that technology that we have today, kind of flying by the seat of your pants, almost literally, in those kinds of craft. So it just, you know, it was, those guys were real pioneers for sure.
Well, there's a mock-up of the Apollo capsule at the Museum of Science, and you can see how tiny it is also. The fact that you're shoulder to shoulder, there's no room to move in those things. And the other thing, Bill, to point out, that computers weren't the screen displays that we have now. They were numbers. Digital numbers would pop up, and those numbers corresponded to something within their programs that they had to read out. All three computers on board the Apollo spacecraft were about, I don't know, a fraction of a percent of the power of any cell phone that we have right now, cell phone computers. So it was amazing. And one final thought, I could go on all day about this stuff. When the when Apollo 13 had the explosion and they lost their power and they lost their navigational equipment and so on, they actually came home. They were on their way out, I think 40,000 miles on their way out. They had to go 250,000 miles out and a 250,000 miles back. But they navigated using a watch and an old-fashioned sextant. Nice. The 19th century sextant.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable stuff. Hey, we're going to we'll check in. We've got Julie Shimana, who is the gymnastics coach at Beverly. She'll join us now. And then we'll be back and touch on a couple of sports items. So hang in there with us on this Thursday, North Shore Today on MSONewsSports.com. We are joined by Julie Shimana, the gymnastics coach at Beverly High School here. And we're at the Sterling Center as we're talking. But, Julie, you guys have had a great season so far, 7-0. And as you look back over 5 years, even before you were coach, it's a string of 54 straight regular season wins.
Yeah, it's been really great for these girls. I mean, they haven't lost a meet in their high school career, and they definitely want to keep that going. But it's just been fun along the way. You never know what you're going to come up against for, you know, each meet and each season. Freshmen come in, seniors go out, and things can change. But they've had a lot of fun, and they're happy to keep this streak alive.
Well, the streak hasn't seemed to change. So now your last meet was on Tuesday night. So tell me about that.
So last night we competed against Salem and Essex Tech. We were going for our 6th and 7th regular season win. Last night was kind of special because every single girl on our team that's healthy was able to compete last night and contribute. Some girls that don't necessarily usually contribute to the team score contributed last night. We counted their score toward our team score and were able to kind of bring up our average.
Tell me about how that works. We'll ask you about some of the players that you have, but how does the scoring work for the meet?
So for each event, they take 6 girls on each event. We create a lineup ahead of time based on, you know, how they're doing in practice and their start values and kind of the skills that they have. So 6 girls go up and then 4 scores count. At the end of the meet, the top 4 scores in each event go toward a team score, and then highest score wins.
All right, what are the events? Go through those for me.
So our favorite order of events is vaults, then the bars, then beam, and floor.
Why that order? Because alphabetically,
yeah,
it doesn't make sense.
That's considered Olympic rotation, and okay. So when, you know, the Olympians go out there, that's...
Well, you and I are both purists like that.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. You know, you want high energy on vaults, and then you bring it down just a little bit for bars, but you still want to swing hard, and then you really got to bring it down for beam because you don't want to be overly excited on there. It's only 4 inches wide. And then you can really crank up the energy for the end of the meet to finish on floor.
Gotcha. All right. Well, give me some of the names of some of the just, you know, athletes from Beverly.
So our seniors are Brittany Berteau, Jenna Benulli, Caitlin O'Connor, and AJ Lurie. Britt and Jenna have been 4-year members, as well as Caitlin, actually. And, you know, they're those girls that could just jump up on any event and we'll give it right to you and just say, yeah, sure, I'm in tonight. Some of our juniors that have really stood out this year, Karen McGilvery and Chloe Kavanaugh. Chloe and Kara both compete in the all-around regularly. And then we welcomed Alana Guy, who's a freshman this year, and she's also one of our all-around spots, and she's really been a huge addition to our team.
Well, anything else that we should know about Beverly Gymnastics here?
We're just excited to, you know, try and hit 55 regular season wins to end our season on Tuesday against Masco, and then looking forward to the postseason. We have a lot of girls that are going to qualify for the individual state meet, and then as a team, we'll head to sectionals and just hope we can get a state berth.
When's the time frame on those events?
The state individual meet is the Thursday of February vacation.
Yeah.
Right after that will be the Saturday for sectionals, and a week after that will be states.
So that's coming right up. That'll come up fast, right? I mean, a lot of things right in a row after that. Yeah. All right. Nice meeting you. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you.
All right. Julie Shimana with us, the head coach at Beverly High Gymnastics on MSONewsSports.com.
Welcome back to North Shore Today here on MSONewsSports.com. Looking at some of the sports news, Lynn Classical girls basketball team under Coach Tom Sawyer picked up a win last night as they beat Medford big, 60-25, but they qualify for the postseason. Also, the Lynn Jets hockey team we did a feature on a week or so ago, they shut out Salem, and they're on their 5-0 score, and they're on their way for the playoffs as well. A lot of teams locking up playoff berths in the last few days, and I'm just looking for the Marblehead score. I thought they maybe I saw that somewhere else. But anyways, just looking at a few scores here. Oh, yeah, Marblehead beat Beverly last night. So Marblehead now is 13-0-1 under the season. So they're having a fantastic year.
Under what was that score, Bill?
The 6-0, I believe. 6-0.
Yeah. That's amazing. Their goals against record is crazy.
No, 6-1. 6-1.
Okay.
6-1. So that's what we've got. And also just coming up, we have a post coming up today on the website with the Revere girls basketball team and also the Beverly gymnastics team. We'll put a post up on that today as well. Anything else in sports you want to share, Rick?
Yeah, well, we've got a big game coming up on Saturday. We are planning to broadcast, but, you know, everything goes as it should. We'll have Peabody at Marblehead, and that is I'm not sure how Peabody did last night. I think they played I'm not sure who they played, but anyway, Peabody Marblehead will be for first place in the NEC North.
Gotcha. Peabody beat Danvers 3-0 last night. Yeah.
All right, so that will be for first place. I believe both teams are unbeaten. They have a tie. Each team, Peabody is 1 point behind Marblehead, I believe. They tied in the first meeting 1-1. So this will be a huge game, 12:30 from Salem State on Saturday.
It says here in the item today, Rick, that Peabody, maybe this is their overall record, 8-3-2 overall, 8-3-2.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, and I believe they're unbeaten in the conference, though, in the North.
Gotcha. Okay. Cool. All right. So that's what we've got for you. Do check back on the website from time to time. Oh, one more thing here. If I just want to plug one more thing just to go back, in case you're hanging still in there with us. Yesterday, we put up a post yesterday morning on a press conference with Seth Moulton and a congressman from Wisconsin. It's all there. All the information is there. But as you know, Congressman Moulton, our congressman from the 6th District here in Massachusetts, has taken a very pro stand on the Iranian nuclear deal. But yet, I think this resolution that he is proposing from the House of Representatives is doesn't preempt that or change his views on it at all, I don't think. But it does look at enforcement of that so-called treaty. It's not a treaty, I get that. It's an agreement. But anyways, the whole audio is up there of the press conference if you want to listen to that. But I do think some of his feelings and stands are coming to a little more clarity on that issue. So it's worthwhile to listen to, and it's all there almost exclusively on our website here on a press conference held yesterday.
Yeah, and I think people should be reminded of the fact that Iranian deal, for what it's worth, is a deal with the rest of the world powers. It's not just a United States-Iranian peace treaty. It's a world thing. And if you notice, the Iranians are trying to get right back into the European market. There was a meeting between the Iranian president and the Pope this week, and the Pope is asking the Iranian president to get Iran involved in anti-terrorism. So, we'll see where it goes. But it's a world treaty. It's not just with the United States.
Good luck with that, Mr. Pope. But, Congressman Moulton in this press conference did note and acknowledge that there's that element that the nuclear deal is there. But then there's this whole other element of how Iran, you know, could have been involved with the taking of 3 American citizens in Iraq this past week. All the state sponsorship of terrorism. So, there are two different things here, but aware of what Iran's role is or has been in the world. All right, well, just wanted to give that a little plug because it is up there on our website. Rick, I guess that'll do it for us for today.
Yep, it's been fun. Talk to you later.
All right, looks like, and maybe a dusting of snow overnight into tomorrow morning here on the North Shore. So with Rick Moore, I'm Bill Newell on North Shore Today on MSONewsSports.com.